welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton. With me today is Andy.
I'm not meant to be here today.
Duncan.
Hey there.
I don't think that's the line from Clerks.
No, I was just thinking that. It ain't even mine.
I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
I wasn't even supposed to be
and
here
John.
Today.
That's me. I'm here.
Are you supposed to be
John
here
John was
today.
Supposed to be here today. Well, it's the summer 2025 anime season. Feels like we're in the distant future. I think I make that joke every time I have to say the year out loud nowadays. But we have a bunch to talk about. We all picked a anime original to watch, except for Andy, who wasn't here. And we're going to talk about those. We're going to talk about our favorites of the new season, which will probably not have a lot of overlap with the anime originals we picked. And then we'll kind of do a lightning round through the rest, because I think some of us have a unreasonable amount of shows they're watching at this current moment.
Yeah, what kind of freaks are you?
I have 7 shows. That's a lot for me, especially if I'm like watching Slayers in the background. So what I thought would be like Tsurune, but bowling, but is in fact
none of those things.
C-3BOO, but bowling, but also not that.
But also worse than that. Probably.
So yeah, Turkey Time to Strike is an anime original about this really talented bowler who always chokes every time that it comes down to the wire, and she has her, like, the other most talented person on the bowling team quits in frustration. And then they have a bowl off to try to make her stay on the team.
Well, they just smoke a big bowl. And they just smoke a bowl.
And then next door in a construction site, a like ancient glowing neon bowling ball is unearthed and lightning strikes it and they're all teleported.
That was the first clue when they were walking by that stupid construction site and it just quickly cut to this glowing bowling ball in the rain.
Ominous buried bowling
ball. What the
just
fuck
in
could
the
that
background
mean?
Of your slice of life sports anime.
And
they all go back in time and they spend a whole episode figuring out that they are in fact back in time, which is something that I don't always know if I like that kind of trope, but they have to be like, no, did we get lost or did we fall asleep and wake up and now we're in the countryside?
My absolute favorite version of that stupid trope is this CG? people saying out loud is a thing in real life CG is so funny. I wish it had happened.
I do like that they solved it because she's like, hey, here's a picture I took of the bowling center and I'm going to physically overlay a picture
of actually
the battle that we're watching.
Like,
it's clever in parts. That's thing about it. It's kind of like the characters are very tropey and grating.
Kind of hate them.
And the premise is kind of weakly introduced because, like, a bait and switch at the end of the series premiere is always a choice. But, like, the individual parts are very funny. I like the hand sanitizer girl who's just always...
Yeah.
When they have to go to the bathroom late at night and she comes back and she's like, ancient toilets are not... not... They haven't
bit.
No toilet paper yet.
What is not a good bit is the purple-haired scientist girl because she her stupid uniform coat, she wears such a big shirt, it looks like a lab coat. It's really... I hate these character designs. Anyway.
Yeah, it's not a particular...
Every time she's
show.
Like, oh, we can't talk about that, we're from the future. I'm like,
wait, so what
it.
Is
Please
the
stop.
What is the premise then? Like, what they, are they doing?
So they end up in the Warring States period. They save
favorite,
and are saved
then.
By this... What's
your
that?
Favorite period.
Yeah. So Goku Jidai. But they're saved by a guy, and he takes them back to his house... where there is an Ojo-sama who is playing, Ditsy Ojo-sama playing bowling with, like, gourds and, like, a decorative ball. And
you get to say
that's
Eureka
really all
when
done.
You knock
they just,
everything
they just,
down.
They just hung out around the house for an episode and a half, if we're being honest here. Right. They keep talking about how they can't break the timeline, but then they're trying to, like, bribe somebody, and they take out a packet of gummies, and they're like, oh, shit, she doesn't know about gummies because it's the Sengoku Jidai. And she's like, oh, no, we have, like, those from a tree. They're called gummies. Okay, yeah, no, we have those. Like, they grow on trees.
And finally, at the end of the episode, it's revealed that she understands that from the future, which is a good thing because, wow, we needed to get that over with.
It took a long time. They are certainly luxuriating in the slow execution of their series premise, but I don't know. It's fine. I feel like it could have been a lot worse just picking a random anime original.
True.
The execution is kind of weak, and the characters are annoying and tropey and kind of ugly drawn, but there's a few laugh lines in every episode, and that's me damning with faint praise. I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
I just hate the characters. I want Rena to let her go. Let her go. She doesn't want to be
there.
I liked
at the end of last episode that like the ditzy polite one was like, hey, this passive aggressive shit is really exhausting. Like, obviously you do care, otherwise you wouldn't be hanging around us still. And
yeah,
she's like,
that's
well,
also good.
Didn't say I didn't care. Just said
either let her go or get in a real fucking fight with her instead of just constantly placating.
Placating someone's passive aggressive attempts to like withdraw themselves emotionally from every single situation.
Yeah, it's like. I don't want to stay somewhere where I'm not hated, so I'm leaving in the middle of fucking night when I'm back in time and I don't know anything and I'm going to die.
That was actually also really good, where he's like, hey, there's like bandits and shit out on the road, so you should at least stay until morning. Yeah. And she's like, fine, if you insist. It's not like I want to stay here, but...
That's how she is, Andy.
The nerdy scientist one who is annoying, the like positive... clumsy girl, the like prissy rich girl who is by far the funniest character of the quintet, like motherly ditzy girl, and then like passive aggressive rival girl who is just always trying to leave every scene. She's like, I'm out of here.
To give you a character like comparison, she's a lot like the mean girl from MyGo. Who just like was basically responsible for breaking up the band in that show. Like,
yeah,
she's a lot like that. Like, in fact, when the show opened, it opened on a scene that was almost literally the same thing. And I thought that's what it was. I thought it was just going to go down that road. And I was like, this is different than what I expected, but okay, sure. And then it, you know, it took another twist, but you know, here we are. I'm not a fan of it, but
you're here.
I might continue or I might drop it.
It's trying a lot of things. Like, credit where credit's due. If you're going to make this demented pastiche and then claim to people that it's a sports anime, like, sure. Like, at least it's trying things as opposed to just being I was expecting a really bland sports anime.
I did like, true. That's also what I was expecting. I was kind of there for that. I wanted that, but it didn't happen.
Aww.
But I will say, like I did mention in chat, like, speaking of credit where it's due, like halfway through the last episode, I was like, when are these phones going to die? And then later in the episode, it's shown that she's like charging her phone with a power bank, which is nice. Like there is a weird attention to some detail, like between that and the hand sanitizer obsession that is kind of admirable. I just wish the characters weren't so grating.
Also, they don't bowl enough. I mean,
I think
they'll probably bowl more, but I wanted more bowling and I'm not getting it.
Hopefully next episode. Yeah. Also, bowling was invented in ancient Japan and not in Egypt, apparently.
What? They thought they were in Egypt?
No. Like, I actually looked this up because I was curious, like, where was the origin invented, and it's thought that it, like, started in Egypt. Obviously, it wasn't the exact same game, but, like, just the idea of throwing a ball and knocking down pins.
Yeah.
But, no, it turns out it was in Japan.
Oh, that is surprising. Yeah.
Huh. Thanks, anime, for teaching me. Anyway. It's not a great anime, but...
I mean, it could be worse.
What's another not great anime, John?
Another not great... Okay, at least Turkey is better than Necronomico and the Cosmic Horror Show, which is just like this stupid death game shit where the Elder Gods are in control. Except the Elder Gods are all these really hyper garishly colored, and Cthulhu is got the giant, giant memories. And it's just... You know, I don't have a lot to say. I said this before in the chat, like, I just don't, it's not a lot, it's not good, it's not compelling, characters are boring, it's whatever.
When I see a show like that, and also knowing it comes from Cygames Studios, I'm like, this is probably going to be a gasher in about a year or two's time.
The important thing is that it doesn't come from Cygames Studios, it's produced by Cygames, which is it.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing I can say about it isn't really about the show, but more about the art style. It's that this really hyper-colorful, like, high-contrast art style is a thing that I see a lot, and they always just end up being these really shallow things. It's like kind of neat concepts that just go absolutely nowhere and are just more about flashing bright colors in your face for the duration of an episode and hoping that that's enough to keep you captivated. And apparently it works for some people because they keep doing it. I think the characters they're worse than the characters in Turkey because just as one note, but they're also like really mean.
I watched one episode out of solidarity with you, John, and found the CGI bits in really jarring. And
the CG in the first episode, the CG is only in the first episode.
Okay. That's a small mercy.
They're emulating a Fall Guys style game, so it kind of makes sense that they do that weird, goofy bean-shaped humans and
yeah.
awkward physics, and it's just that's what that first game is. And then after that, everything's...
Is it like a game per episode?
Yeah. Well, no, like, the first episode was one game, then the next game was two episodes, and then this current one is another two episodes. This one was just one episode, my bad, sorry. Because it was an escape room and ended very quickly in a very stupid manner, because of course it did. The entire premise of it was that it was called Hotel Reversal, and they were trying to escape the room, but because the clue was in the name, Hotel Reversal, all the things you're told are backwards. So you've got to do the opposite. And so two people died because of that. Sorry, they went insane because of that, because that's what Elder Gods do.
Into the Shadow Realm because of that.
Yeah. It's not good. And I'm going to drop it. I'm more than happy to drop it now. I'm done with it.
Sounds like some post-Danganronpa shit that isn't Danganronpa, but it's trying to get that crowd.
I have not played that game, so I'm not.
Okay, fair enough.
I've heard good things about it, though. This is not good, so...
so...
I think the writer for Danganronpa has written, or at least helped write, one of my favorite, and by one of my favorite, I mean like my only favorite visual novel, which was 428 Shibuya Scramble. I think he also worked on Danganronpa. Not 100% sure on that. But I've heard them put in similar buckets, and so I'm mildly interested in that. But, oh, and also there was like a bad AI translation...
scandal
thing in the German subs that literally had the GPT prompt in it or something, and so that's fun. AI bad.
I mean the way that you should do it is saying stop supporting, but even then it's hard, right? Because it's like, I know that like Manga Plus, for example, so all of their shorts, all of the one shots that they do, they have gotten an AI to translate that
machine. There's, translated shit.
Yeah,
that sucks. That's an official app, right?
Like, yeah, that's official.
That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bullshit. But then you see some of the other mangas, and they've already said that they'll never like AI translate serialized stuff. But there's one, The Creepy and the Freaky, that I really like, and I can't see any credits for who's translating it. So I'm just like, maybe this is AI translated.
I almost wish that the show I chose had an AI created it translation for its title, because that would explain why it's so dumb. So my choice was The Bullet/Bullet, which is an extremely dumb title for a pretty dumb show, which is basically a Mad Max style action comedy. And if that sounds a lot like Trigun, well, that's probably because it shares a character designer with Trigun and Desert Punk, and apparently he's got one particular thing, which is post-apocalyptic wastelands.
I'm fond of the bear. I just want to say, I haven't seen the show, but I am fond of the bear man. I like a good bear man.
The bear man is good. On. Yeah, because like the story is certainly not original.
Is he a literal bear, or is he just a buff?
He's a bear. Like a literal bear. Literal bear.
Andy.
I also support buff men, just for the record. Like,
yeah. I was going to say, like, who doesn't like a buff man? Yeah.
It also does have buff men, because it does have a quality selection of weird goons and sidekicks. I think Ben mentioned previously that a reviewer had commented that the side characters were better than the main character, and I'd say that's largely true.
Mm-hmm. That's Anime News Network.
Because, yeah. Out of the main three, you've just got this typical anime teenage potato called Gear, who's the MC, and then you've got a robot sidekick with multiple personality programs living within it.
I love that shtick.
Which is great, because they're all different. One's like his grandmother, and one he calls his sister, and one's his auntie, and it's like an entire family within the robot. And then you've got the polar bear, who's just like kind of like down on his luck and cynical, and those tropes combined in a big polar bear is quite a fun one. Certainly more than the like typical teenage anime protagonist and his blonde love interest. The one other character I enjoy is like later on. There's the always enjoyable, hard working by day, hard drinking by night police lady, and that's certainly a well worn trope, but it's an enjoyable one.
I'll say, looking at the visuals here, like, you're right, the main character looks the least interesting, even just on visuals alone.
Yeah. He wants to go beyond the walls and explore the world, John. No one's ever wanted that
so
before.
So it's an anime.
Yeah. I really haven't been surprised by any of the plot beats so far, but in fairness to it, it has all made sense. It has been coherent and competent, but it's certainly not innovative in any way, shape, or form. I think the biggest minus I have to say about the show is that they chose to go with CGI for its cars. And that means, like, it feels like a kind of high-res GTA rather than allowing the form of animation to do what something like Redline does and portray speed through warping and distorting vehicles as they slam down straights and round corners. And it's just kind of okay. It's just proper 6.5 out of 10.
That's higher than I would rate Turkey or Necronomico. So
I'd give Turkey a 6.5. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like generic chocolate. It's okay. It's not particularly good for you. It's just...
I get what you're saying.
While you're eating it, you're fine. But after you finish, you're like, I could have spent that time better. Those calories could have been something delicious rather than this. But what this season does have, which is delicious, is many sequels and adaptations. Because this, we commented last time that this is very much season of the sequels, and I think the one big one, which we were all fans of the original season, was Dress Up Darling.
Yeah, love. It's great. I mean, I've been looking forward to Bisque Doll season 2 for ages. It's done a very good job. The manga ended recently. I don't know whether people know this, but manga recently ended very quickly and abruptly and not in a good way, because the mangaka had a health scare and was already decreasing their publication times, but then had supposedly a big enough of a health scare to just stop altogether, which is a shame, because...
Well, you can always resume in the future.
Well, who knows? What I would hope is that I'd hope the popularity of the anime means that they make some anime originals off the back of it, but we know that that's never going to happen, because
that's not how the media landscape works.
No, an anime has a severe a lack of interest to show anything past the beginning of a relationship. See every other anime under the sun. They could easily happily fit in 3 seasons of good shit for Bisque Doll, and I'm really liking where it's going. It's done the same thing that I always find, where I'm just like, this bit of arc is kind of weakly done in the manga. I don't remember it being very enjoyable. And also some of the characters have real same face syndrome, where I'm just like, who's these people again? I've gone to the point where later on, apparently Gojo just has friends. And I'm just like, when does that happen? I don't remember Gojo ever having friends.
We've definitely entered the dumping characters on us arc, both in Call of the Night and in My Dress Up Darling.
Yeah, but the dumping characters feels like, I don't know. Yeah, it's very good. What they're doing right now, it's just like perfect, beautifully animated, like really getting to the heart of why people like cosplaying, and sort of Gojo and Marin's relationship around that. Gojo feeling, like, you know, weak and inferior compared to Madden, and it's lovely to see. I'm really, really enjoying it, and I hope they make an absolute slam dunk of 3 seasons, but who knows? Who the fuck knows? Maybe 3 seasons and a movie, knowing how the current landscape works.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely.
I felt the animation in Dress Up Darling this season was a bit freer and a bit more off model in a good way than it had previously been. It had previously been very polished, and this time they seem to be giving themselves more license to be expressive, which is, I think, a positive thing, because sometimes I think adaptations of very successful manga tend to be kind of conservative on the animation side, because we must respect the author's designs, we must never warp them or change them.
I don't know if that's true, man. I just like Mob Psycho, you know, like that is all off model all the fucking time.
Okay, but that has quite an off model original author. One is not a conventional.
The art style, you can't compare the art styles in this as well with the original shoujo art style.
Okay, I'll trust you on that one.
We're gonna talk about how anime sucks at adapting cool art styles in the original source. Yeah, because it does. There's a few exceptions this season though, which was nice.
I quite like the manga. I don't hate the manga art style, but it definitely does feel a lot more male focused, the art style in the anime, as opposed to the sort of female focused drawing of the manga.
Typically, It's true, yeah.
Yeah, they just, like, because when Shoujo draws Shoujo, it goes super into Shoujo, whilst this still has sort of, like, the male gaze side to it. The manga has as well, but I think it's written by a woman as a female mangaka in a male comic, a comic series. So she has to, like, ramp up the etchiness a little bit, but it's still great. I love it. Talking about stuff that's always unmodeled and perfect, City is banging. I absolutely adore City. I love the manga as well, and I feel that they've done a great fucking job to City. There you go.
I've enjoyed it. I haven't watched the latest episode because I forgot about it because it's not on Crunchyroll. As I mentioned earlier, I forget everything that's not. I'm just bad about remembering.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it. I know that a certain cast member here has problems with it, and I agree that those things are true, but they don't bother me as much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad people like it, and I like a lot of it, but all the jokes take so fucking long. Oh my god, I was watching episode 3, and the joke of, like, this guy wrote a script for the animals, and then the animals need to be bribed, and then they attack that's him. Tough. That's 4 minutes long. It's 4 minutes long of him, like, taking off his shirt, and we spin the camera around, and then he goes over to a drum, and we spin the camera around, and then he raps out, you know, a little taiko drum thing, and then we pause to show some other fucking part of the city. And it's like, oh my god, like, this is someone who is like, this is the equivalent of being at a party, and someone's telling a very funny story, but they keep remembering other funny stories, and they, like, try to, like, weave those in. I'm like, holy shit, just focus.
So whilst there are bits like that, there's also these really quick cut jokes that absolutely kills, where she's got time off, so she's going to try her water skate shoes and just steps in the river and just sinks. And it's like less than a second, barely even enough time to react. And it's so funny.
I think it is a funny show. I just think that it's definitely always at 11. Like, it never slows down. It's just going.
I don't know. Like, I think episode 2 is, like, really sweet. It's not that funny. It's all about nostalgia, and you just have, like...
No, it's... But, like, every single scene is just this hyper-exaggerated everything. Like, if you boil down the events to their core, yeah, not a lot's happening. It's pretty sweet or slow or whatever. But every single moment of animation is just...
There's a lot of animation. There's a lot of animation on screen.
Yeah, what I compare it to is, like, remember, like, a decade ago when we got, like, you know, BioShock and Deus Ex Human Revolution and all these games where, like, the environments are so, like, richly detailed that it was hard to fucking figure out what you could actually touch and use in any given thing, and they'd have to put, like, the classic era of the golden sheen around any interactable object. And I feel like that's a lot of City, where, like, I wish that there was a golden sheen around the actual jokes, as opposed to just, you know, when they're sweeping down a hallway and they're about to go into the door, and then the camera stops so that someone can walk in front of the camera before they go through the door. And it's just like, oh my god, just use a cut. There's something called a jump cut, and you're allowed to use it, and it doesn't make your filmmaking better if you never use a jump cut.
But what I like so much about it is City is in the name, about the city, and so included with its inhabitants. And the manga goes into great details of having all these characters interact.
I'm not reading the manga, I'm watching an anime.
Sure, but my point is that the anime, like, does a very nice job of making this city feel alive and feel like there's lots of people there who will eventually come in.
It does feel like a place. I do not really know a lot of the characters that they keep taking time out of their own jokes to show me. We'll see. It's not entirely my thing so far.
There's like I think there's about like three core teams, right? There's the people taking photos with like their with the college girls.
The university girls.
Then you got the high school girls, and then you got the restaurant. And then around that, there's people like the mangaka, the weird scientist guy who's perving on everyone. Like, there's...
Oh my god. Mangakas, stop putting a mangaka in your manga. Yeah, like, for real. Stop it. I don't find your jokes about how you're scared of the deadline funny. I don't find them funny.
I like how every mangaka you know is a mangaka because he's got that stupid hat on, the Tezuka hat. And I'm just like, yeah, it's good stuff.
I like the I like the mangaka in Gintama who is portrayed as a gorilla.
Yes.
Because that's funny.
Yeah, but that's literally the mangaka of Gintama. Yeah.
It is the actual author himself. It's a self-insert. It's just he happens to do it as a gorilla, and that's funny.
Yeah. And I like, but I also just like the smaller details, the stuff that there's like a poster that's in most of the shots for the first two episodes that gets recalled back and becomes the thing that Ben is talking about. Like, I think that's great. I love the attention to detail that they've put into it.
Yeah. I'm on your side. I like it. I just think that what Ben's saying is absolutely also true. Like, I understand why it's off-putting.
Fair. And then the other thing I love is just the color scheme. Like, it's so much different. My worry
It's my favorite part. Yeah.
My worry was that people would be, and I've said this before, people would be saying this is just Nichijou again, but not as good. And I'm like, it clearly has a different color scheme that sets it apart from anything that Nichijou was. And I think that's really clever. Like, it's such a bold, beautiful, simplistic art style with bright, lush colors that instantly pop out.
Yeah. I think Koyani's commitment to the drawn art style is remarkable. Like, I love that they've done things which are out of focus with cross-hatching. Like, and I think it does lend, as you were saying, a sense of place to it. Everything is given an equal weight. No things artificially. This is what you should be looking at. And that creates a very real sense of a world where no one is necessarily the main character, that we will always be following this person. So we sort of flow in and out of situations. But that also, at times, can make it feel like a video Where's Wally, where you're not sure which one of these figures in the crowd is supposed to be commanding your attention until that's the one. Okay, we'll spend a bit of time with them and then on to the next. But I do like it. And conversely to Ben, I think I enjoyed the third episode more than the first two. I'm not sure.
I've explained myself very clearly, so you just don't understand it. That's all it is.
I get you, Ben. No, I understand.
I get the feeling that Ben doesn't like any Wes Anderson films, because that's also a strong take I get from City sometimes. It's like,
okay,
the anime.
I love Wes Anderson films, and I don't think I'd make that comparison.
But the way that it's so intricately constructed, it feels like it feels sometimes like Wes Anderson.
You mean crowded and visually noisy? Yes, I agree.
I told you he didn't like him.
Wes Anderson knows how to stop and focus on a scene.
That is true. Yeah, that is true.
There's very little emptiness in Wes Anderson style emptiness in the frame as opposed to City. I like City fine. I just like I'm gonna have to spend the next 3 months hearing people glaze the shit out of it. So I'm here to say it's fine. It's a bit overproduced. It is a bit overdone for jokes that are often not that funny and are not improved by adding 2 minutes of padding to the execution.
I think that I think it's funnier than Nichijou.
No, you're wrong.
Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. Yeah. I knew who the characters were in Nichijou versus like photograph girls, high school girls, and restaurant people. Anyway, what else are we watching?
What was the show you liked then, Ben?
Yeah.
I mean, I've really enjoyed, if I had to say what I'm enjoying the most at this moment, it would probably be Call of the Night Season 2. I think both it and Dress Up Darling are very close, both in terms of like the relationship has kind of been established and it's about them like feeling out each other more fully and like coming into a fuller understanding of it. Marin is adorable, but Nazuna, especially the latest episode, I don't know if anyone, where she's like explained, like gets caught kind of revealing that she has an NTR fetish in her manga and getting scared in the hospital and being like, oh shit, that was a ghost. And it's like, no, it's a vampire. You're literally a vampire. that was a vampire.
So I have a question. This might feel like an attack. You just said you don't like when mangaka are in stories, but then you said that she has a manga.
She's a manga fan. She's reading it, not writing it.
Okay. Yes. My bad. Never mind.
She loves fighting games and like she's talking about, like they're talking because the whole point of the second season is that he's been expected to. They have to fall in love with each other, or he'll never be a vampire. And so like kind of figuring out, because we find out that vampires lose their memories, very early on this season, and so she doesn't remember how she fell in love to become a vampire in the first place. And so they're kind of trying to just figure out what they like and what inspires love in her to try to, like, you know, speed the process along. In addition to a bunch of other stuff, there's that vampire hunter shit that it's fine, whatever. It's a cool character, but yeah, really just them like kind of learning their tastes and kind of having to come to terms with the fact that Nazan is kind of a creepy old man in some ways, and also a little boy in some ways, and also a girl that he has to feel love for as someone who doesn't, I don't think has, he says he's never felt love for anybody, and just,
or his, what he believes his understanding to be love is sort of different. I didn't think that she had to fall in love with him, though. I thought it was just him who had to fall in love with Nazan.
I don't know. I think they have to fall in love with each other. I think you can't just get a one-sided crush on someone and turn into a vampire.
Because then there's the other arc in episode two with his friend and the vampire that his friend's into. And it sounds...
I say none of this sounds like real vampires, and that's upsetting me.
Yeah, I hate to say this to you, man. They just walk through doors like they don't give a shit. Night.
What the fuck?
What,
man?
The fuck? It's fucked, man. It's cooked. You shouldn't watch it.
Yeah, it's got a good OP. I'm enjoying all the world music that they're going for there. The Brazilian and English and the ED. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, but the way that they had the relationship between his friend and the other vampire, who was like the mystery girl in the bar. Like the way that played out, I got the impression that she had no emotional attachment to him, like actively trying to court him and get him to fall in love with her, which was successful because she's a weird vampire that sort of has had thousands and thousands of offspring over the years. So that to me felt like it was a one way, it was a potentially unrequited love as opposed to a mutual love.
Sure, but obviously they're moving towards a mutual love regardless.
Yes,
like in the writing.
Yes, I really like that. I really like also the way that Cole is slowly realizing the weight of his action. This idea that like, shit, this is it for me. I'm like my life's going to change. And the way that he reacts with been speaking to Akihito, who was a recently turned vampire, and seeing how. I don't know. I felt like Cole didn't see his change as positive, and I felt that like he was started questioning it ever since that bathhouse scene.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting how like he's met other, like I made fun of like, oh, they're just dumping characters in because it's the mid cycle of the manga's plot, but meeting all these other vampires and like it used to be just kind of Nazna's catty friends mm-hmm. who are cheering her on to actually like turn someone into a vampire someday, but as we meet all these people and like how they became vampires and how they remember themselves and discovering that like keeping your past around as a vampire like neutralizes your powers. Yeah. So you have to like, they're trying to figure out like, I do not remember what is from my past, therefore I do not know what can hurt me, as kind of an idea is very interesting, and kind of building out why people become vampires and like what everyone's doing there. And I made fun of how the second half of episode three is a flashback to some random characters, like how she became a vampire and got over her like chronic illness because of it. But it is interesting to see that there are people
that
who
doesn't happen.
Yes, it happened. Are you kidding? The sickly girl who tries to leave the hospital and collapses in Nazna's take. Did you?
Anyway,
this is and I don't remember this happening. What happened in that episode
move on,
to you,
gentlemen?
It was half the fucking episode.
We can't debate facts here, only opinions.
You're looking up on your phone, Jesus.
It's clear that there's a fourth episode that I haven't seen, so maybe...
Okay, anyway. Anyway.
I remember the hospital bit, but I don't remember there being a long backstory. I remember it was like 5 seconds of her being like, oh, I just woke up in bed and don't remember anything. Like,
okay, well, there's a long flashback where you find out some other vampires shit going on. I should use episode numbers instead of saying the latest episode this always happens to us. Anyway, like I make fun of it having a backstory, but I do think it is interesting to find out that like we're encouraged to assume that like everyone's kind of vampirization falls along the same lines as Ko and Nazana, but we're seeing that like lots of different people became vampires through different processes, for different reasons. There's one vampire who like likes to steal other people's like prospective vampires and turn them into a vampire herself, which is how we get the NTR conversation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And also, it's just a beautiful show. You were talking about the colors before we started recording, and like just the nightscapes that they create, and the way the like the city seems like alive with this like deep elemental like glow, like almost like an octarine sort of energy around it is really nice.
Yeah, the way that they play with deep purples, but then they also play with like lush neon greens and oranges and yellows and ways that like colors that are coherent and like resonant with night scenes in cities, but the way that they play that and put that in surreal places where those colors wouldn't exist, like in the sky, and pretty like everywhere that should be dark is like lit up in these neon like hues and colors that change. It makes it so much more visually interesting and delightful to watch, because it reminds me of sort of like the later JoJo stuff where they colored palettes change all the time with Hirohiko Arakai's artwork. Like, reminds me of that.
Love that shit.
Yeah, it's so good. And
got words on that later for a different show.
Looking forward to that. But yeah, no, I'm really liking it. I feel that the first season felt like a childish wonder. Like, it was this childish excitement of realizing that vampires exist I could be a vampire. And now this feels like season two, the reality is setting in, and it's sort of maybe this like teenage sort of area that season that we're moving into, where things aren't all rosy. There are problems, there are issues, and I'm excited to see where it will go. I really enjoy it. And yeah, the soundscape on top of that, like a lot of it was done by Creepy Nuts, and I don't know whether they produced some of the other interstitial works, but they definitely were inspired heavily by Creepy Nuts's music. Mirage is a banger. The backside song, I can't remember, but yeah, very, very good.
Speaking of other shows that had Creepy Nuts as a soundtrack, but no, now sadly do not. And yeah, you could say that would make them having a being slightly inferior to their previous version. Dan Da Da Dan season two.
No, you couldn't, because it's a good song.
Yeah, but
sorry, no, I'm not gonna allow this fucking attack on this new OP. The new OP is still
it's not
good
as
song.
Good as the first OP, John.
It is.
Otonoke shits all over that song, man. I'm sorry.
Nah, they're both just good. Both are good. Both can be good. You don't have to fucking make them fight.
I'm on John's side. Yeah. We don't need to rank things.
They're good.
We don't need to rank
things. But if you're ranking things, one would be better than the other.
We're not ranking things. We're not ranking things because they're both good.
But you're not ranking things, but I am. So I'm saying that
But maybe one of us was trying to make a point about the quality of the two seasons of show. For instance, one of us might be saying like the second season is not quite good.
Yeah, the second season sucks.
Second season, I wouldn't say sucks, but tedious, certainly.
I don't think it sucks. That was me being a clown. Continue. Sorry.
No. I was just trying to lead a horse to water, and it was just like, no, fuck this water. I'm off.
Yeah. Fuck this delicious animated water. Dandadan.
I will say, okay, so like the complaint that me and Ben have, which I don't know if Duncan, you share. I know Andy does not share.
Are you tabling this to the board? Is this what you're
saying? Yeah. So the complaint that me and Ben have is that it's just kind of boring because nothing's really happening. It's just a bunch of fights and fights and fights and fights and fights. And like, there's no like, it's not an interesting character stuff that I really liked about the first season, which was mixed in with the fights and stuff. Like, you know, like having all that as a whole package is what made it compelling. Whereas right now, we're not really getting that. And that's kind of lame.
We're stuck in a hole for three episodes.
I will say now that the latest episode 4, I think that they're out of the hole. They're out of the hole, Ben.
They got out of the hole. We're gonna get out of this hole.
And something about it, just like everybody showed up from like previous episodes, like the alien crab man came back, like grandma showed up, the weird unibrow guy that has like 16 layers of unibrow showed up, and it just all came together.
The mannequin comes back.
The mannequin showed up. The anatomy dummy showed up. And they just all like worked together, and it was just really fun. Like in a way that the previous episodes have not been. Like the previous episodes have been stellarly animated and like technically impressive, but have not really been an enjoyable ride. Which isn't to say I've hated it, like, to be clear. But this was just, like, suddenly it just ramped up to, like, absurdity, and I liked it a lot more. I mean, the alien showing up was just so funny to me. I just started laughing. I was like, okay, yes, this, okay, yeah, sure, why not?
Chiquita and Mr. Chiquita, Mantis,
yeah,
shrimp.
And, yeah, and his son.
That, yeah, I mean, I hate to break this to you guys, but this is most of the show is just fighting. Like, it is just a fighting manga. There's, and a lot of it, like, this was what surprised me so much about the first season was how many much heart they managed to put into it, because some of those chapters are literally a page long. Like, that whole backstory with Ida and her, like, the dancing ballerina stuff, which made me cry buckets, that was a page, maybe two in the manga. And then they span that out so beautifully. And
I would say then, in response to that, they adapted the first season extremely well. And the second season so far, they have fallen flat. Oh, and I think they're just riding on the coattails.
But John, you don't know how long that fight scene was that you just got through. It was I swear it was a couple of volumes. Like,
what, the whole alien thing?
The whole, like, you thought you were in the fucking hole for a long time. The manga took for fucking ever. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah, you're blasting through it. You're getting the good adaptation. Like, this is still the good adaptation.
Fair enough.
I enjoy. Yeah, and I hate to say this, but like, this Evil Eye arc ain't ending anytime fucking soon. We're still going. God. It's still going,
we have to have a training. I've been told
that they captured him. He's been captured. Yeah. So the next episode, they're going to clean it up. The next episode is the cleanup of the arc, right? No,
Time to make friends, John.
Oh, no, John, you're so. I wish you were right. You're so fucking right.
Ben, we're fucked.
Yeah,
it's just like. It made me feel like I had, like, dozed off, like, really briefly at, like, very, like, tactical intervals, because, like, they just go to the bottom of a hole and there's just, like, a ghost down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Separate from the death worm, there's a ghost down there. He gets possessed by it, and I don't know, and traps him in a glass house. No. And says, you can't get out of this house.
The ghost worm isn't possessed. The ghost worm.
No. I know, but it's weird. It's weird that they just found two monsters in there.
Also, there wasn't just one
monster in the basement. There's two monsters in the basement. Yeah.
But this is what they do. Like, they've always had this for the whole series. They have one spirit yokai, and then they have one UFO Uma thing. Like, that's the recipe for Dandadan.
That is a fair
just,
point.
It just felt like he appeared out of nowhere. It's just like, oh yeah, there's like a suicide boy down at the suicide ghost boy down at the bottom.
To be fair, that's the Dandadan. Andy's right that is the pattern. Like, there's always one thing, and then another thing just happens to be there too. Yeah. And I get it. He's right. You're right, and I hate admitting it.
it didn't feel connected at this point. It just really felt like well, we got to get to the bottom of the hole because the mangaka put a secret down there for us to find.
I like Gigi, and I want Gigi back. Bring back Gigi.
Yeah, Gigi's not going.
He's so nice.
John, babe, Gigi's not going anywhere.
Gigi's stuck in the mud right now.
I know he's not going anywhere right now, but right now he's...
No, I mean, he's
not there.
He's a core character for the whole of the series.
Oh, no. I understand that. Right. I just mean, like, we haven't seen him for three episodes.
Yeah, we have to deal with, like, weird, grim, suicide guy. Oh, my God.
Which I will say, I like his fighting style. I love a kickman.
Yeah,
kickmans are fun.
Kickman
and underpants too, which is very
Well, they're always in underpants. What do you? It's just what they fucking do in the show. Whatever. I'm used to it. I am desensitized. Anyway.
It's fine. Like, I don't dislike spending 22 minutes every week watching it. It's just man, like, heart is the right word, Andy, is that the first season had so much heart, and this feels so much like just playing out, like, stuff that they have to adapt because the internet will come kill their families if they skip over the Evil Eye arc. But I wish they would.
I don't know, there's bits of the Evil Eye arc I like. It gets really weird. If it's going where I think it's going to go, it's going to get really fucking weird for a chapter.
Well, that's a relief.
And then it's going to...
I'm here for weird. I like weird.
The training arc is bizarre, and that's fun. And then hopefully it will get to the actual good bit, which is the kaiju arc, which...
I just realized you were serious about the training arc. I thought you were making
jokes.
No, I'm not. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, John.
John, there's
just hit me.
There's a training arc, but it's actually... It's cooked. No, it's really
I'm not against a training arc if it's good. It's just my brain dismissed it as a joke, and then suddenly,
clicked. It's not a joke. Yeah. No, anyway. But I shall let you know. This is the only training arc the manga has done so far.
Interesting. Okay, I know.
It is the best adaptation of this manga you could have asked for. Otherwise, you would have got Sakamoto Days.
But, which I'm not watching.
Oh,
promise kept. Promise kept to your listeners.
Look at Ben changing his morals.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, I can stop at season breaks, especially when because everything's a new show instead of having another season. But no, Netflix really tried. They're like, hey, you watched all of Sakamoto Days? I'm like, yeah,
yeah.
Remove the suggestion. Thank you.
Speaking of seasons of shows which are temporarily a fair while apart, we got the second season of Grand Blue Dreaming, which is a extremely dumb comedy, which me and Andy both enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's even got less budget, which
I think you're not wrong, Andy. It is,
works.
But it's still really funny.
It works massively in its favor. Like the opening dance is so memeable. I'm surprised it hasn't been, like, it's almost done on purpose. It's that bad. It reminds me of the Madaka Kuroya is impervious to my charms. Like, that's how bad the anime opening is, but it feels like it's done it on purpose in response to that. It's very funny. And it, like, if City is a lushly animated comedy, Grand Blue Dreaming is the exact opposite and is just as funny for it.
It has that same thing that Konosuba does, in that they're an absolute bunch of horrible people, and them just being complete shits to each other is absolutely amusing.
Horrible in different ways, which I find is fun.
Can you remind me what Grand Blue is? So I thought it was a swimming anime.
I also thought it was a swimming
anime. It's a sport. It's a university diving anime where the main guy goes to a diving club, and it turns out that the diving club is just a poorly veiled excuse to drink and then strip to their strip.
Okay.
The first season was very funny, but kind of forgettable, to the point that I forgot all the characters. and the first episode is a very good reminder of everyone's works.
Okay.
I loved the way they did the recap, Andy. Like, having him, like, his sister's written to them going, okay, what's my brother been up to? And they're like, okay, we're going to make you write an honest letter to her. And he's like, well, I will say no lies, but I may admit a few things.
It's very funny. It's like that first episode almost felt like that was maybe something that was written in the manga. Like, it just was very good, like, reminding you. Yeah. And also the manga's still ongoing, which I didn't realize. So it still is popular. It's still hitting the comedy angles, and it's still getting a lot of laughs out of me and Mids.
It reminds me of something like Cromartie or DMC back in the day.
They're very good. They're very good reference points. They're definitely, right, they definitely
you've piqued
feel
my
like
interest
that.
Now.
Yeah,
because I do like those shows.
You'll get a laugh out of it. I guarantee that much.
Cromartie's is a good thing to bring
you'll
up.
Get, I can't comment on the first season. It's probably got some inappropriate jokes because it was what, like 2014?
2018.
Yeah, it was a long fucking time ago, but
it doesn't have to be a long time ago to make inappropriate jokes.
It's true.
Yeah, but maybe some that have aged
worse. Sure, I got you.
Than others. But, like, yeah, it was a very fun show, and it's still a very fun show, and it makes me laugh, and I am looking forward to seeing more of it poorly animated.
Well, cool. Let's take a break and then talk about the rest of the shows this season. And we're back. I think we've just got a bunch of random series. John has like 12 to talk through. So yeah, lightning round mode now.
Oh, am I going first? No, we're doing...
Well, no, not yet.
Okay, phew.
Okay, well, then I'll talk about my two. Even though I didn't really like Panty and Stocking, I ended up watching the sequel, and I think it is improved by having the demon sisters move in, and now there are four characters that can be sent off in different combo pairs, and it just means it's not the same joke of Panty is slutty and Stocking is a binge eater. Yeah. There's actually, like, There actually are the two demon girls who are very normal and just generally like drink tea and sit around and talk about how angels suck, but variously get sent off. The gross out humor is still a bit over the top. It's always interesting to see the funhouse mirror of American culture through like a bad pastiche of Cartoon Network classics. Episodes 2 and 3, the first episode's awful because they have to undo the stupid cliffhanger from the end of the previous season. Yeah, they just spend a whole episode walking it back.
Yeah. Fuck. Okay.
A demon got inside her head and turned her into a demon, so they have to get the demon out of her head by but then the next ones are funny because like the demons move in, they live in a basement below them and have an elevator under the couch, and it's funny. I actually like the demon sisters are so much better than Pan and Stocky's characters that it kind of like dilutes what's the really like abrasive, unpleasant parts of the show. It's still like really not my thing, but just comparing it to how I felt about Panty and Stocking, it's night and day.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I've been kind of avoiding it because I again don't want to go back into Panty and Stocking world. But I think if you're saying it's better, I'll give it a go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you liked the rules, girl. Rules.
I've got
there's that.
I'll try to scrub most of that out of my brain.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry. Well, I'm bringing it back.
I think I watched 5 minutes of Panty and Stocking once and said, no, I'm good. And that's my Panty and Stocking experience.
We did an episode on it, and it was kind of,
I mean, as we pointed out with Grand Blue Dreaming, being around a bunch of assholes and watching them interact can be amusing. And like, I think the problem with the first season of Panty Stocking is that it was just the same two assholes being the same way to each other. And so broadening the cast to have a couple of extra people who are perhaps not as bad as the others, it sounds like a winning formula.
I mean, that's it. Like, there's so much work in the first season to make just every character in Panty and Stocking just insufferable. And so to have like the bad guys just now be part of the team and they're just normal and don't cause problems. And like, there's a whole thing there at the end of one episode, like Panty and Stocking start fighting again. And like the demon sister comes to pick up the other demon sister and she's like, oh, I knew you had this appointment, so let's go. And they just leave and they just have a very normal relationship. You can improve a show by putting likable characters in it, believe it or not.
I think one of the secrets to why Connor Super is so funny is you have the core four of trash, and then you have people who are sort of vaguely okay, like Wiz and Union and Chris, and they're all like...
Yeah.
And they're all like perfectly normal people, and they all suffer at the hands of the core four.
And even then, like, amongst the core four, you still have some... Boke and Tsukomi sort of like shtick where at least one person is trying to play the straight guy.
Yeah, what's terrible about one person is often in opposition to what's good about a different person.
It's the fact that it's all not like it's all not that, it's all just crazy up the wall maximalist humor that never really lands, but it definitely landed for my mates at uni. They really enjoyed it. But still,
there are people who like the show. Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of people who like it, and feels like a weird madhouse thing that people still like to this day. So glad that I've got it out of my system. I guess now it's back.
I've seen people who are extremely happy with the new season. Like, oh, it's just as good as it used to be. Woo! Whatever. I guess.
I think their memories aren't quite what they thought.
It's always impressive that a show that has this long a gap, same with like Grand Blue, where it does just feel like nothing's changed, even though a lot's changed in those preceding years. Like, it's impressive that they can do that. It's the only thought I have on that show. Unlike my thoughts for the show that I adore this season, and I think it's weird that I say I adore it because it's not happy, and it certainly isn't a show that I look forward to watching every week, but I have to bookend it with two very happy shows because it's very depressing. But Takapi's Original Sin might be my favorite thing this season. I think it's something. I'm a big fan of Tizen 5. I have to confess, this manga flew under the radar, but that was the thing that got me back into reading manga. Was Mids was like, you should read this manga. And so I read the first chapter and went, no. And then read other manga and found others and then got back into it. But then like his other works that he's done, Ichinose's Family of Ichinose's Family Sins or something like that.
Is that one also just misery porn the whole time?
No, I don't think it is. Yeah. It certainly has similar themes going on, but it is not as relentlessly miserable that Takapi no Genzai has, which I think works in its favor. But I also am loving this show. I thought it would be all pretty miserable, and it still is, but...
And it is. It's nothing but.
But I feel that the thing that I like about it is the fact that it's not the same type of miserable. It changes its tune every now and then. I don't know how it ends. I'll be annoyed if it ends with them going back in time and then fixing everything. I don't feel that that's the sort of tone this manga will be going for.
Here's my problem with the show. One, the dumbass octopus sucks. I hate it. I hate it so much. Two, I had to stop watching the show when I realized I was rooting for the timeline to reset so that she could just kill herself and be done with it. Like, oh, that's what I'm rooting for in the show. And I'm like, I can't watch a show with that mindset. What am I doing? This is not fun. There's nothing interesting happening here. It's not saying anything. It's just people being miserable. I've been bullied, not to this degree, to be fair. I've been suicidal, again, not to this degree, to be fair. I know what it's like to be a miserable person. There's other sides to life still, and none of that is being shown to her because this dumbass octopus doesn't know how to do it, and nobody else is trying either. It's just... It sucks. It's not
most of them are
compelling.
Most of them are... I disagree. I think Takapi is great. I think Takapi adds a bit of light relief on the occasions. Like
because every time he tries to be light relief, it compounds the misery. It doesn't act as a counterbalance. It acts as more weight on the side of everything being absolute shit.
Yeah, and that's also the other bit I like, is the fact that he is like the innocent that kids should be. He is the innocent person who doesn't know anything apart from happiness, and then to have his reality is broken around him makes it even harsher. The fact that fact that there's one thing seeing bullying happening continuously, but there's a different feeling of someone experiencing it for the first times, which makes it even more bleak.
I think the thing is, Andy, no one has a childhood like Takapi. Like, no one has a happy, happy childhood. Everyone has some degree of pain.
I was
in
talking
their life.
About a theoretical sort of child happiness.
I know, but the thing is, when you think of anime which deal with childhood, you think we'll often talk about things like Nononbiori and like this idyllic childhood where everyone's happy, where you have your friends and it's just quiet and happy. But there's no minimum age for misery.
Yeah.
It finds us wherever it finds us. And I think John hates it for this, but I think it's very deliberate that it's doing this.
Yeah.
That he's there to be like, this is what we say childhood is like. This is what society wants to depict childhood like. And when you throw this expectation of having to be happy at someone who is depressed, someone who is bullied, like, that makes it 10 times worse. There's this recurring thing where they all have different expectations, like Marina, like her mum keeps wanting her to manage to do what she did and to find a happy relationship and to prove like what her own mistakes haven't irreparably ruined her. And like, it's just this cycle of people making mistakes and those mistakes causing other people pain. There's a lot of cycles of hatred going on in the world, and people don't have easy answers to them. Just saying you have to be a kinder person or violence solves something, like, because we are very deliberately shown one character as being a horrible bully, and then we get shown that she has in turn been horribly bullied, and it's just this...
Wow, insightful.
You're being glib, man, but I feel that that Duncan's...
Because I hate it.
It's good. I disagree, I think.
Disagree that I hate it?
No, I disagree with what you're saying. Disagree.
But even these days, people will reach for easy answers to horrible questions, like punch a Nazi meme. This is where that leads. It's You have to find a different way, otherwise you just create more misery.
Oh, it's a good thing that her other way was to finally kill her bully. That's working out.
But it's not.
That's my point. That's my point. Like, the other options it offers are always bad.
But this is exactly what
that's why it's bad.
It's not. That makes it interesting. What, you want like you want like everything to have a simple solution that they can just...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Ding, there you go. Fixed. Like, it's interesting.
What I want is something complex and not just this shallow...
I think there is complex...
...presentation that everything sucks and always going to suck because everything sucks. Like, that's not interesting.
But I think there is complexity in there. Like, we've already seen Kuze... Like, now she has stopped being bullied. You're seeing a change in her character. She is now abusing Naoki's relationship with her. If she just says a few sweet words to him, that he will be putty in her hands. There's changes that are happening that are deeper and makes it feel more real and personal. I think it's very good. And on top of that, you then have Junya, who is this act of good that Duncan's saying that is breaking the cycle. Like, Junya's existence in... Like, that last episode was beautiful. I loved that scene.
I didn't watch the last episode. That was when I quit.
You're probably two episodes behind, John. Dear God, no, things have happened since then.
No, I'm one episode. I watched the first three.
I think a new one came out recently, like today as well, which I haven't seen. But Junior's like brother relationship, again, it's that sort of... And Tizen does this really well, I think, is that he makes you think this person's... something that he's not, and I think that we're going to get that a lot with all these other characters.
But they are what they are. They're all just miserable.
But they're miserable for different reasons. I think, like,
it doesn't matter what the reason is. Like,
it does.
Can I just, because neither of you have watched this episode yet, I will say they directly address the idea of people perpetuating violence, and they have a character reflect upon their actions and change it because of that. So the cycle
character and how.
Can't tell you without horrendously spoiling things.
You need to tell me. You need to tell me. You cannot convince me of anything without telling me.
Okay, I'll spoil for John. So in episode 5, we find out what Takapi's original sin was. Is that when he first came to the world, the first person he met was Marina. There's an entire arc where he makes friends with her. It addresses the idea that her mother's expectations on her and how she was bullied and how... Takapi's original sin is trying to make her happy by going back and being violent.
So the whole thing is that for the first three episodes, they have this setup where he's supporting the suicidal girl.
Yeah.
And then they do this rug pull.
He goes back in time to stop her from doing the action which causes Marina to get hurt. But her kindness to him makes him change his behavior and forget that. And idea that,
okay,
that you can find a way out of this through kindness rather than through violence. It's imperfect, but they seem to be trying to navigate a way out of it rather than spiraling down. That's the essence.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That sounds much better than the first three episodes. Good news, it sounds better.
Yeah. All I was saying to John and Dean is basically... By episode 5, they're trying to navigate their way out of this spiral rather than going down.
Well, I would say that the other thing I like about Takapi no Genzai is there's two things. One is it's beautifully animated, like the animation, yes, and
that is true.
And talking about like aping a mangaka's art style, they've done
that's exactly what I was talking about earlier. Yeah, like this is a very good example of. It's possible to make an anime that looks like the original art style. You can do it. Please do more of this, animators.
They really fucking nailed his art style. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And it looks nothing like other anime. It's so unique.
I also feel that in a current anime culture of feel-good slice of life stuff, it is so anti all of the other animes that I'm watching this season, heck, this decade, because it's... doing something that, even if it's not doing it well, it reminds me kind of like Wonder Egg Priority. Like, that was not a good show. That fumbled its landing and definitely was, like, weaker than the sum of its parts. Like, I also feel that it's probably going to do it better. I don't know. I don't know how it ends, but it's not even marked as, like, an anime series. It's marked as an ONA. And it's like got a very strong fan base already. Just
Maybe I'll watch it then, so I can hate it better.
I don't know. I I'm really happy that this thing got animated, and hopefully we'll get other darker, more interesting stuff, like a Pun Pun, like even like his...
Like a DDD.
Like obviously. A DDD, yeah, but like the fact that we got it at all and it looks this good.
I just wish it was, you know, not what it was.
Fine.
That's always a tricky situation.
Then let's instead talk about a show which, instead of having a summer full of horror and stuff, is just a summer full of light and wonder.
She's great. This is a great kid. This is the
this is Ruri Rocks. And Ruri Rocks, A Introduction to Mineralogy. And basically, it does exactly what it says on the tin, to use an old Britishism. It does indeed give you a evocative and informative introduction to the many types and properties of minerals that you find around, and the show does indeed rock. It's very much a combination of cute girls doing cute things combined with rural escapism, and that is pretty much my jive.
I think that is understating it. Like, cute girls doing cute things is a very established genre and format. Yeah. This is so much more than that, because the kid is... Well, so far, she's the only kid. I know the OB has a second kid that will eventually show up. Her, like, childlike wonder and curiosity at the world is so incredibly genuine for how kids act. Yeah. And her, like, hyperactive, like, mood swings from, like, being disappointed with this rock, but then immediately excited because the adult she idolizes tells her a cool fact. And then she just swings immediately to being super happy. Like,
She's excitable and greedy, but also hardworking and sincere, and that, like, that's a really nice combo.
Yeah, and she's like kids that I have met in real life, like as an adult, and they're the ones that make me want to have kids, which, you know, is some depressing side thing, because that never happened. But I just love her so much.
If she was a kid, I would agree with you. She's a high school student. She's like 14.
That is a kid, though.
I mean, I would agree to both of those.
Biscay Doll, they're also kids. They're the same. They're the same sort of same years.
That's my point, though. Like, why I'm saying, like, this is a different format from, like, Cute Girls Doing Cute Things, where they're high schoolers, but they act so much fucking more mature than hard schoolers. Yeah. Like, they're basically adults in a high school skin.
Yeah, that is very true. That is one of the most common tropes. Like, things like Buffy are famous for having dialogue where it's written like an adult speaking through teenagers. And I think John is right that it's nice to have someone who's excitable and eager, like all of us were as dumb early teenagers, rather than...
I don't know, man. I find her really annoying, and I find that this is also... Like, I do enjoy it. It's fine. I will watch it all because it's well animated and I like characters. But it is another anime under the belt of stuff that me and Mids have started turning shit you could have just Googled. She asks these questions, and it's like, well, why are you getting this person?
Because she's
a
dumb kid, and she has an idol right there. I mean,
Andy, that is like saying, why not just ask for the ending to every story, and then you're done?
No, it's not.
It's because you tell the story. You have to tell the story. It's in the telling. It's not the ending.
There's a difference between like characters who are like having a relationship and like going through things, as opposed to someone just being like, "What's that rock? What's that rock? Google it, mate. Just fucking Google it. Stop."
Have you never had a teacher?
But she's
you
not
never
a,
had like a good teacher.
He's like fucking kids.
She's not a teacher.
Jesus,
she's not a teacher.
Where's my beer?
She's clearly taken a teacher role, though.
Nagi is 100% a teacher. That's actually a notable thing about her. That I think in a lot of these shows, like, you have this kind of the adult in the situation is often either like an oddball or sort of a lazy layabout who sort of like is begrudgingly overseeing the high school club. But Nagi's like got this kind of easygoing confidence.
Yeah, she's really enthusiastic about it. She wants to teach.
She's competent as well.
But she's a university student. If she wasn't enthusiastic about rocks by the time she's at university, she's studying the wrong thing.
Right. So what's the problem?
The problem is that the kid...
Andy hates people caring about shit and kids bothering him. Get off his lawn.
Would it be better if she was miserably bullied the whole time by the older lady?
Yeah, that'd be more fun.
Oh my God.
Different rocks phone.
Were you never a kid who asked people, like adults?
Well, not at 14. Like, no, not in high school.
No, not... You didn't have teachers in high school? Yeah. Do you know what high school is? Yeah. It's teachers. Yeah. They talk to you. They tell you learn things, dude. That, Jesus.
But none of them were like...
No buts. That was it. That was the whole thing.
But hey, she's not a fucking teacher. She's still not a teacher.
She is. She's volunteering to teach this kid. It doesn't matter if she's literally being professionally paid to be a teacher. She has volunteered to take this role as a mentor to this younger girl who is excited
about... She's absolutely mentoring Ruri. I'm formerly Ruri's teacher, and I'm inducting her into my class. Please sign this form.
She's not a teacher. She is teaching her, but she's not a formed teacher.
Wait, so that's what a teacher is?
No, they're two different things. She is not... She's not paid by someone to teach this kid.
She doesn't have to be paid.
Oh my god, you can be a volunteer teacher, Andy. This is crazy. Remember, people, you can't do something unless you're paid for it.
Agreed. Just like
you're a fraud.
Just like this.
You're a fraud.
Just like this podcast.
I want to die. Anyway, moving on.
And the other thing is, like, I love that third episode where they go to the university, and it's got this really charming kind of functional messiness to it.
It's my room right now, like,
yeah, kind of my life.
So like every time I had to go to a tutor's office in uni, it was always this place which had this sense of a person with too much stuff and too little time, and this whole university has that feel to it. And I think the pacing's really good as well, because we get the first two episodes with Ruri and Nagi, and we just get a little bit of time to explore their dynamic, find out basically their personalities. And then in the third episode, we get Nagi's colleague, Imari. And I like how they took, like, her obvious, like, passion and knowledge for books, and, like, this idea that knowledge can be found in these notes and margins that tells us things by implication, and then use that at in combination with the idea that you can go out and by finding the minerals around a place, you can figure out its history of both.
Yeah, it's all got a very academic approach to how they explore the world, and that's an interesting change of pace to just, I mean, I would say other edutainment shows, even, I might even call this, where they just tell you the facts and kind of don't really explain the process. I think that this one does that really well.
Yeah. And, like, the animation is just incredible. It's made by...
It's insane, the animation.
Great looking show.
Yeah.
It's directed by Shingo Fuji, who produced the equally over animated Onimai. The studio is called Egg Firm, and they did a lot of the work with Jobless Reincarnation as well, and that responsible for similarly over animated bits in that. Like, Jeff has previously joked that animation strength is basically powered by perversion, and I think there's times in the show where you wonder about ends and means in terms of how they acquire the motivation to produce such amazing animation.
Whoever designed these characters has a clear fetish for short stacks, and it shows.
Yeah, you should watch Onimai.
That's definitely on the mangaka, rather. Like, the animators certainly are not pushing back against the mangaka's stuff at all. Despite that, I don't really think it has fan service as such. Like, you could certainly say it's shot with a male gaze at times, but it's not overwhelming, and it never feels forced.
To put it the way that I did in chat, which is not the most flattering way, like, in any other anime, her big naturals would be causing earthquakes, just, like, constantly.
Yeah.
But instead, she just kind of walks around, and she just exists as a woman with large tits, and it doesn't really make a big deal of that, shockingly enough, despite that being, like, the core
wait until episode 13 where she's on a beach.
I know, right? I know.
There's this moment in episode 2 where Ruri dives into the water, and my immediate worry is, oh god, this is going to do anime 101 in perversion. It's like, okay, character dives into water, they come out, their clothes are wet and see-through. Nope, nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
Just move on. And I'm
that was nice.
The one thing, just to call back to something you were talking about with Call of the Night, is that it has this outstanding sense of light to it. Like, the way of the edges of a character will sort of glow gently when it's backlit, or like in the second episode, they have this scene where they're at the river, and the weather begins to change, and so the lighting of the scene starts to change, and then we get the rain coming. You go from this vivid summer to this sort of washed out overcast day in the course of a scene, and like it's absolutely wonderful visual storytelling.
Definitely looks like they've looked at a woman with Nagi and gone like, this is how a woman with big tits would look as well in real life, as opposed to drawing them all like One Piece characters.
Yeah. I would agree with that. She's more realistically proportioned, and it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Everyone's very like stout. Like someone talked about how it's just stretched slightly horizontally. Mm-hmm.
It's like squished vertically or stretched horizontally. It's obvious what they like, but it doesn't feel overbearing, and it just kind of is who they are, and I appreciate that. And you know, sometimes characters can be hot without having to shove it in your face all the time, and that's okay. That's okay, anime and video games and everything.
I also thought the Onimai connection was strong in this one.
I'm just going to say that in this context, I looked up what Onimai is, and it's called Onimai, I'm Now Your Sister, and you want me to watch that after talking about that?
No.
You are insane.
That was the joke. You weren't supposed to look it up, John.
Oh, okay. Okay. You got me good. That one, okay, I fell into the trap, so fair enough.
I actually do want you to watch it, John, but there you go. Nope.
You're out of your mind.
Surprise, the joke was real.
It's good.
I'm going to briefly talk about my standout show. It won't take as long as the ones before. It's called Detectives These Days Are Crazy. I really like it because the main guy is a former famous high school detective, now kind of like a dead, not dead, like a middle-aged...
dead inside.
a middle-aged, grizzled private detective who isn't really capable of doing what he did before because his whole body is always hurting. He's slower. He's just not as good as he used to be because he's older. And it's very funny. Like, the OP shows it, opens up with him, like, you know, kind of like a typical noir scene of just him, like, smoking a cigarette. He stands up, and then his back cracks, and he hunches over, and it's just really funny. Like, it's got a lot of moments like that. I think Ben might appreciate it the most in that context. And then his assistant is this ginky high school girl who is obscenely strong, you know, like, that trope of just like being extremely fit in every way, and she's able to hide, like, just she's got Shinzo Gahara syndrome where she can hide tons of things inside her school uniform, and it's funny when she just like suddenly drops it to like lose weight and run faster or some gag like that. The latest episode I watched, they went to a hotel in that typical kind of detective thing, like where they're invited to this mysterious mansion where everyone, all these famous people are invited, and something's clearly going to happen. And the whole joke is just that nothing happens.
That's good.
Like they spend the whole episode like,
that's a good
like,
bit.
Yeah, it's really good. Like I think the show's honestly really good. I recommend it a lot. Detectives these days are crazy.
I remember seeing that and thinking, having come off a season where I was watching a meta show about detective stuff and mysteries, maybe a comedy version would be a nice change.
I will provide one disclaimer, is that it does, the first episode does kind of open up with like a panties joke, but after that shit goes away.
Okay.
So do not get turned off.
Explain the fact that early reviews seem to pan it. So I was put off. This season is so stacked. Like I was like, okay, this is routinely getting twos from people. It's probably not worth my time. And
it's genuinely just really funny. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's like Grand Blue in that it's just dumb and funny, and maybe that's worth some time. Another show I know you liked, John, but of a very very different tempo is With You in the Rain, which is just Office Lady and Tanuki and chill vibes.
First thing I'll say about that is the OP looks so fucking good, and it has that same thing of that sort of like unnatural colors applied to the sky and the environments that I really love, and I wish the whole show looked like that. I understand that the main show is like, it does look good. It's got this really soft approach to like line art and color and lighting and stuff, and it looks good, but wow, every time I come to that OP and then I come back out of it, I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, it's a really good good song as well. It's really catchy and just
it's pleasant. Yeah,
actually, the two people who would know this and probably haven't watched it, like Andy or Ben, would you be able to tell me if it's kind of city poppy, the OP?
I haven't watched it, unfortunately.
You'll have to refer that back to me at a future point.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of just relaxing, and I think that like lady with cute exotic pet is not the most complicated of formulas. I think the thing which sort of stood out to me though is that somehow they've actually made having a tanuki as your pet, and then deciding whoever has done the sound for this tanuki is obviously a genius, because it's just sort of like goes,
it's like this little sniffing sounds and like breathing sounds. It's never like barks or makes any, like, there's never any vocal tone to it. It's just all these little sniffs, and it's really adorable. It's the most adorable pet I've ever seen in anime. I love it so much.
Yeah, it just sort of waddles around and expresses its mood by the leaf on its hair turning into a little flower when it's happy. It's extremely adorable,
like a Pikmin.
Could be
kind of like a Pikmin.
Maybe you're Pikmin or all Tanukis. Who knows? Who's Andy? That's quite possible, I believe. And it's kind of slideshowy at times, which can happen with chill out anime. But I think if you want a chill out show with a cute pet, it 100% delivers. Like if I just need to wind down, it's half an hour. I come out of it generally feeling better than I went in.
It's one of those shows where I just kind of like, I realize that I'm just kind of smiling throughout it. I don't laugh because it's not like a laugh out loud funny. It's just kind of pleasant, and it just makes me feel good.
Yeah.
One of those shows.
A good place to hang out. I like those shows when you find them. Just
yeah.
I also one other show that I'm enjoying this season. The Summer Hikaru Died. Full confession, I've only watched one episode because... Okay. I, like everyone else in this cast, forgot that it was on Netflix.
Yeah, I haven't got around to it.
Not on anything else. I thought it would be a bit of a misery fest like Takapi, given the name of the show. But actually, it's like a weird sort of mystery show with alien extraterrestrial elements. Yeah, so a character called Hikaru goes missing in the summer. In the winter. And then in the summer, his best friend Yoshiki is like, I've been thinking this for a while, but are you actually Hikaru? When you left for a weekend to go to the mountains, you've come back and you seem different somehow. And then it turns out that no, Hikaru died in the winter. Like this alien has been taking over his body. Reminded me of episode 2 of Takabi's Original Sin, where the mum's like, you are not my daughter. Could you give me back my daughter, please? Similar thing. Yoshiki is going, you are not my best friend. Could you give me him back? And when they're like, no, then he is.
I will say that was one of the few scenes that affected me in Takapi. So good call on that one, because it was a really good
scene. It was a great scene. The thing is, then, is the first episode, at least, is Yoshiki coming to terms with knowing a secret that no one else knows about his best friend's death, but then having to wrestle with that, and then also his own emotions with him as well. There's definitely some strong Yuri vibes as well, which is interesting. And the other really interesting thing is that
you don't mean Yuri, you mean Boy Love.
You mean
Yaoi? Yeah, I did mean Yaoi. Apologies. Okay. Apologies. I did mean Yaoi.
Fair enough.
The other very interesting thing about it is it's specifically set in July of 2020, which I'm just like... If they're not going to do a COVID thing, like, I don't know what they're...
Why do it at a time?
Do it at all?
Another show's already done that this season.
Really?
But
which one?
Neither of you have got to that yet.
Oh, is this Takapi? No, Takapi was... Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Interesting.
COVID is a specific plot point. You'll get to it.
The only other the only other thing I know that has specifically COVID in recently is the second part of the Fable. So there's a second series of the Fable, which is all set during COVID times. I'm interested to know where it is going, and it has definitely caught my it's piqued my interest. It's actually quite sweet. It's funny. I don't even remember laughing, but it's definitely entertaining, and it definitely keeps your interest. And it's also well animated. It has. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of. Oh, that fucking anime that I hated. That movie.
Which one?
It's a long list.
That is not a narrow list.
Oh, fuck. The guy who did Final Fantasy art. Oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, there's some shots which are very artistically done with like a person's eye crying as like a weird interstitial. and I am looking forward to watching more.
Yeah, that's one I'm going to get round to eventually. It was actually my most anticipated for the season because I really like the sort of sense of weirdness around it. I'm a huge fan of Haruko Ichikawa, who has a very similar genre of stuff. She's the mangaka behind Land of the Lustrous, and she didn't do this, but she did a selection of works called Insect and Songs, and that deals with like interactions between humans and other creatures, and this seemed to have a lot of similar things. Like, it reminded me a bit of Annihilation, and that all is good stuff and intriguing to me, and so I'm saving that one up to watch as a full series at the end of the season when things are a little less hectic and I actually need something to fill in rather than now when they're throwing a new episode of something good at me every day.
That's why I'm kind of glad that The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity is on Netflix as well, and they're also just stockpiling them all and supposedly releasing them after it's all done.
Oh, yeah. That's another Cloverworks show, yeah. which is getting a lot of good noise from people watching it in Japan and US, but sadly the UK is only getting it mass dropped at some point. So.
But it feels like, of all the shows, like it feels like the wrong way around to do it. It feels like the mystery show is the show that you want dropped all in one so you can just gorge on that shit, but the slice of life romance anime is the one that you want to drip feed because that... But hey... Yeah. Who can understand the myriad workings of Netflix and the way that they want to cancel shows because they're bad at what they do?
That's true.
Who knows?
What,
Ben, do you have any more?
I only have one other show. I am watching Rascal Does Not Dream of Santa Claus. Over the past month, having a lot of free time, I watched all of Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai and enjoyed it enormously.
That's good.
Managed to track down and watch the three movies, which I enjoyed with
So there are three movies, right? I'm not mad.
Yes. It would have been better as a season of television. I guess I can kind of understand why they would make the movies, you know, to make them more events, but they really are just one of the arcs of the show, but done as an hour and a half movie. And I was telling y'all earlier that by the end, I'd kind of tired of the format because when you're watching a TV show, you don't know how many episodes are going to be devoted to adapting a certain arc. And so there's this kind of uncertainty as you're trying to solve the adolescent syndrome that the person's getting or whatever. And like, you don't know if this is going to be the solution, as opposed to in a movie where you know the movie is 90 minutes long and 30 minutes in, they're like, we figured it out. And you're like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. according to the time on my watch,
according to time, you're going to mess up. And then have an escalating crisis, and then you're going to figure it out. And so I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed how it advanced some of the stuff. And there's, especially with Shoko, the character who exists simultaneously as a college girl and a middle school girl in the fiction, finding out how she appeared to the main character was possibly about laying the groundwork for some plan that she would have later in the future, since she already exists simultaneously in the past and future. Was really interesting, but just the format was really, really kind of ground down the sense of mystery and discovery. And I am not sure how I feel about the new season.
That's disappointing.
There's this growing thing where like Shoko has seen all these different realities, different futures, and she's like, in none of these futures is this one pop star that everyone's talking about existing. And he's like, the main character's like, oh well, that probably doesn't matter. and it's been revealed to matter, and it kind of redeems what I thought was a pretty boring adolescent syndrome for the first three episodes. Is that it's kind of feeding into the sense that reality has been broken in some way, or possibly like there is a massive adolescent syndrome affecting all, like everybody, or at least a large number of people. Mm-hmm. So it's taking a while to build up. And I think, unfortunately, the story just kind of lost momentum by going from a season of anime to three movies. It certainly lost a lot of viewers, and that I talked to people who loved the TV show and have just been unable.
I'm with the fan
sub situation on the movies is a nightmare and is still kind of not really.
Yeah, I mean, that was me. Like, there's one movie on Crunchyroll, Rascal Does Not Dream of a Dreaming Girl. And I don't know what, I don't even know where that comes in on the on the three.
That's the first one. And then there's Rascal does not dream of a sister venturing out, and Rascal does not dream of a knapsack kid. Those are the three.
So painful. Those things are so painful.
And the worst part is like the third one is I think the weakest of the movies, and it's the one that has like the most setup for the next TV show, so you can't even skip it and go straight into the TV show. Anyway, it's very. I mean, it's kind of like how with Monogatari, we have the whole problem that the OVAs aren't subbed. So, like, the end of Bakemonogatari is not on streaming, and you got to kind of find that yourself. It's just...
Yeah, you got to watch the 420 rip.
Yeah, it's just crazy to have, like, to have the first season and the first movie, and then not the second two movies, and now the new season is streaming. And so, sorry if you thought that this anime platform would contain all of an anime that you want to watch. But yeah, we'll see how it turns out.
Does it matter though? Like, are the movies?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
You will be very confused about several things if you do not, because there are major developments for the little sister. There's major developments for Shoko. You basically don't understand what Shoko's deal is if you don't watch the movie that's related to it. Yeah. There's a bunch of details about the pop group that. The girlfriend's little sister is a part of, like, all those become important characters. It was definitely the mid course of a manga. We're introducing a lot of new characters, but on the plus side, they're all at college and they're largely having a pretty typical college life, which is something that you just never see unless it's like Genshiken or Golden Time or a show that's specifically written about the experience of being in college,
like Grand Blue Dreamer.
Is it drinking and finding excuses to get naked? That's the college experience.
That was my college experience. What about yours? I mean, this is the thing though, like the fact that there's three movies and I can't easily watch two of them, it just means I'm out. Which is a shame because I love the first season. I thought the first season was really good. Oh well.
Womp womp.
Dr. Stone's still going and is still very good. And I like that in the last chapter they're talking about going all the way to this specific point in South America. And for two episodes, I've just been going to Miz, been like, why don't they just use the Panama Canal? They could use the Panama Canal. Why don't they go through the Panama Canal instead of going around like the bottom of South America? And then they just had a bit where they're like, 10,000 years later, the Panama Canal probably doesn't exist. And I was like, oh, they've actually thought about this. This is good. I like this part of the show. Dr. Stone, fucking awesome. Really enjoyable. Still continue.
I'll catch up one day.
Bar a few bits, which is weird, like, sure, you could cryogenically freeze a man, why not? Like, apart from that, it's great. I love Dr. Stone. It's very good,
and at least it's kept coming out, and so you're not waiting like 6 years until the next season.
I think this is it, this is the last season. And we've had like a weird hour-long OVA. I think we've had two of them, and then a couple of, but it's all on Crunchyroll, so it means that I can watch it in one place. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I really like Dr. Stone, and hopefully it lands its ending. It's about all I could ask for.
Good. Who else got what?
I got a lot. I can go through it really quick.
Okay, back and forth.
Okay, I'll start with the longest one, which will still not be long. Lord of Mysteries is specifically a Chinese production.
Yeah.
It's very strange. It is very like brown and like hyper post process. There's also particles flying everywhere, lots of blurring. It has this really ethereal look to it, which works great because it's also this really occult in its themings. It's got these like weird layers of like reality and like people turn into fucking, you know, they like teleport, they don't teleport around, they like turn into something and then move around and turn back into themselves. They like look through mirrors to see each other. Like, you know, it's very magical, but it's not like typical fantasy magic. It's occult stuff. And it's got ghosts, it's got wraiths, it's got not, I don't think they are demons, but like demon-like things. And it's really compelling. I don't know if it's good. The problem is there's this problem where a lot of genre fiction, I think, when it becomes like standardized, they stop explaining like basic things, right? They just assume that you know. And I experienced this a lot when I started reading like martial arts comics from Korea. Like, I just did not understand like a lot of the things that they did. And then I just kept reading more and more of those comics because I really enjoyed like the basic things, and I started to grasp the basic concepts. And over time, I'm just like, oh, okay, I know when I read this comic what I'm going to get out of it. I know the basic rules of things. And I think that there's a lot in this show that is like that, that I just don't fucking understand. So it's really hard to sell because of that. But I also think it's really compelling despite all of that. I kind of recommend it. Also, it's a... This has so little bearing on anything, but it's also an isekai. Because why? I don't know.
Oh dear.
It just doesn't matter, but it is one.
the one sort of thing in that regards of like, I don't know where it came from. Every time a sword user uses like the sword to slash the air that then makes its own projectile, I never understood
like,
that.
Like aura, yeah.
Yeah.
Sword aura.
Or Zoro from One Piece or... in fucking Demon Slayer.
Yeah, it's just it moves so fast that it causes the air to vibrate and then cut things. I don't know, whatever, man. It's fun. Anyway, moving on from that. Did you want to go now, Duncan? Or
the one that I know both of us watched is Clivetis. Yeah, which is a fantasy which isn't an isekai.
Dark fantasy specifically. It has to be said. It's a very grim, dark setting. It's not pleasant to be in.
Mm. Yeah, it starts off with like the heroes going off to kill this great dark beast, which is hemming in their kingdom and stopping anyone from leaving, and they all get slaughtered pretty easily. And it decides, okay, I want to find out why these humans are attacking me.
I'm tired of these guys, so I'm going to wipe them all out. Is actually his starting.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, goes to the sort of central big magical kingdom, wipes the whole thing out, and. Then gets persuaded by someone to conversely adopt a child because this child has done nothing. Like she goes through all these sort of like emotional reasons why he should do it, like because it's innocent and all this. And in the end, it's like no, actually, he will be useful to you. I promised this to you, and it's like maybe. And so this giant dark beast adopts a human, sort of vaguely beastman child, and decides to resurrect one of the heroes to be its mother. And from then on, it's just like him deciding, okay, since this child is child of royalty, I'm going to actually use him to usurp this kingdom and find out if these humans are worth wiping out or not. Can I control them or should I just end them all now before they cause any more fuss for me? And a lot of this, they sort of go back into this sort of small frontier bandit hovel and after they're captured. And it reminds me a lot of some of the stuff which went on with Game of Thrones when they went over the wall, this idea of like lawless and violent men and the way they treat women. And
it's definitely a Game of Thrones tone wise.
Yeah.
Nothing good happens to these people, but it's got this like sort of human overtone with the dark beast trying to like understand things. And you can kind of predict that he's going to slowly grow to care for this kid. And then maybe he'll see as humans is not worth or as worth preserving instead of wiping out. Who knows if that's how it's going to happen, but that's kind of what the vibes are for me.
Yeah. It's, as I say, like, I think it distinguishes itself from some works, like things like Goblin Slayer, for instance, where it doesn't seem to be gratuitous about its violence against women, even though there is some violence against women. Like, it does not linger over them sexually. It does not, there's no, oh, you're hurting me so much in making vaguely sexual noises, etc. It's just violence is quick and it is nasty.
And it's just the accepted reality. Like, I would agree. It doesn't linger on things like that. It just is what it is. I should say it lingers on violence a lot. It does not linger on the sexual violence a lot, which is an important distinction.
And I so far that the characters you've met, I think are actually quite interesting and characters. And there's a servant girl who's been beat up by the bandits and she gets killed due to various things, and he decides to resurrect her as well. and when she's brought back from the dead, that like the first thing which she notices is her teeth have been restored, which were previously broken. And I thought that was just like this really strange scene, like where someone's just the first thing you see her realizing is like just sort of like touching her teeth and being like, oh.
That is not strange to me, because I have lived most of my life without a significant amount of my teeth. And the day that I got them finally put in, it was, you can feel it so much. Like even now I still like am shocked sometimes when I don't feel a hole in my mouth, just because I was born, you know, that I just didn't grow some adult teeth. So like different condition from her, where she was, you know, traumatically beaten into that condition. But I understand. I sympathize with that feeling a lot. Like it made a lot of sense to me.
But that's very much a thing which is better writing than just, oh, I've been resurrected. Everything is strange, and it's more nuanced. The other thing to say about it is taking a deliberately retro aesthetic at quite a few times. It's kind of its artwork resembles, in terms of character design, resembles things like Lodoss War, rather than the modern generation, which very much feel like they are cribbing from games as much as they were from old RPGs. And it's, for its flashback sequences, it kind of uses almost like a CRT filter, which I know John absolutely hated, but
yeah, they render it at 480p and blow it up to the full screen, and it just, it's ugly. It sucks. It's ugly. Whatever. Moving on.
We had a little bit of a discussion in last season about OPs and EDs, and like I think it's got a really interesting ED in that it feels incredibly traditional. Like it's got an English pop star doing a song, a sort of haunting song over images of locations and characters, as sort of stills of characters panning across them as they look into the middle distance. It just makes me think very specifically of Scrapped Princess for some reason. But it's nice to have something which is traditionally fantasy. Back to you, John.
I do kind of wish it was a little less grim, but I appreciate that it has a more human element to it as well. Anyway, yeah, back to me, huh? Okay, this is going to be, I'm going to go super fast now. Okay, so I've got another isekai, Apocalypse Bringer Minogra. World Conquest starts with a civilization ruin. Its whole gimmick is that, well, there's two gimmicks, as Duncan will point out. The first gimmick is that it's a 4X game. The second gimmick is that he gets teleported into this world with one of the video game characters, who's also conscious that it's a video game, which is kind of interesting, except it just ends up being Overlord, but boring.
Yeah.
So it's not a good show. I'm dropping it after this.
Yeah.
And then Kaiju Number 8 is a sequel to Kaiju Number 8, first season.
Are you sure it's not Kaiju Number 9 then?
they're currently fighting Kaiju Number 9. Okay, come on, man. Keep up.
Sorry,
the OP is fantastic, but it's got this aesthetic to it that I know Duncan will hate. So.
the Gantz. I call that the Gantz aesthetic.
Mm. Hyper CG, super shiny, like really abstract stuff that just looks really fucking cool. And I wish the whole show looked like that. I don't know how they would pull it off. It's impossible to pull off, but it would be really cool. Moving on, Deku no Moguta, the Earthbound Mole. It's one of those shows where you got some normal people who suddenly find themselves involved in the supernatural because of this guy. And this guy happens to be, it's not explicitly stated, but at this point it's sort of hinted that he was a former god, but he didn't really like being a god. He got kind of kicked out of heaven, so now he's stuck on Earth and he's just kind of trying to work his way back in. It's initially sold that he just wasn't allowed to die because he did something really bad. And I'm inferring now that it was because he was formerly a god and did bad things.
Okay.
I wish it was more compelling than it is, because I love that concept. I'm always a fan of like people dipping into the supernatural and weird things happening to them. It just so far is kind of boring. Night of the Living Cat is about zombies were cats instead.
That was a movie.
I thought it was a movie too, but no, it's a series. It might have been a movie first. Now it's a series. I'm watching the series. I'm not going to keep watching the series because it has this, like, it has one good joke, and that's that everyone loves cats and does not want to hurt the cats, so that it just keeps going. And the problem keeps escalating because everyone's afraid to kill the cats, even though the cats, they're easily killable, because they're just fucking cats. They're not smart.
Well, that's so cute.
I guess to be fair, zombies are often easily killable too with the right tools, but. Yeah. Regardless, anyway, the cats are, like I said, it's just the one joke, and it is a good joke. It is a really good joke that everyone just loves the cats so much and they don't want to hurt them, so that's why things keep getting worse. But it's the only joke, and I'm kind of tired of it. I don't know if I'll keep watching. We'll see. Hotel Inhumans is not like Apocalypse Hotel. It's just, it's not like Inhuman implies maybe monsters or something. No, all the Inhumans are just like assassins and shit, and the hotel is about dealing with their shit. It's not very interesting. The Water Magician, the last isekai I'm watching, the dude dies, and the god is like, hey, what do you want to do in your next life? Because, well, why not? I'm just going to let you do whatever you want. He's like, I just want to live the slow life. So he gets dropped in the middle of this like extremely dangerous territory, but he has a safe zone around his cabin, and he's a Water Magician. And honestly, it's really kind of just really pleasant to watch. I'm shocked at how much I enjoyed that show based on my description that I just gave. Like, it's not a compelling description, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds boring, but it's nice. Gachi Akuta, I don't know.
Oh, are you watching that?
Yeah, it only has 2 episodes out, which I'm surprised by because it's been like 2 weeks now without a third episode. Mm. I don't know what's going on.
Interesting.
I picked it just because the art style is unique. This guy lives in like on a floating island, I guess, and he lives in the slums, and he gets accused of murder, and any crime that happens, they kick him off the island. They just drop him and assume that they're going to die on the surface. But no, he lives somehow after dropping hundreds of feet onto a pile of rusty trash. Like, just everything's horrible. And then there's trash monsters, and he has the ability to use the spirit in his gloves that he cares for to punch trash monsters. I don't know, man.
I mean, who doesn't?
And that's it. Oh, and Witch Watch. I'm just keeping up with Witch Watch. I still enjoy it well enough, but I don't have anything more to say than I've said before, and that's me.
I've got one more to add real quick. Game Center, Cultural Exchange with a Game Center Girl. It's a fine slice of life romance about a girl called Lily Baker and a guy called Renji who like have an awkward exchange at a game center. It's fine. It's well animated and it's cute. The only interesting thing is Amaki Sally is the Japanese voice actor, and she is actually fluent in English. She just naturally speaks English. So the British bits that come across, that this girl who's British and only speaks British in the show, it actually works really well. She is also Carol in Tomo-chan, which was another show I quite enjoyed. And also a good like one season romance. Like, it just happens. They don't mess about. But unlike Carol, where she played, I knew it was interesting because she played the Japanese and the English when the English voice acting came on. Mm-hmm. She got the English dub as well, which I thought was interesting.
That's cool.
She turns out, it looks like there's a different person who's playing her English voice acting role in the English dub for Game Center Girl, which is wild because her English is really good.
That's funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
I guess actors have to react to each other, and if you haven't got a performance that's for two people to go against each other, that does...
Or she might have just been busy.
But she re-recorded her lines in English in...
Yeah, but I mean, it could just be
another
time.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. She looks like she's getting on as like a voice actor. She certainly is becoming more and more popular, but I don't know. I don't know if I'll watch any more. I've probably watched some more, but it's not one that I think I'll finish. I just think it'll be when I have a moment and I'm bored and I want to watch something not at all challenging or engaging, I'll put that on.
That is the exact same attitude I have to Dealing with the Mikado Sisters is a Breeze, which is a harem anime with one pretty boy and 3 sundae girls. It's surprisingly well animated and funny, but it is absolutely just a harem anime. And I just randomly bung it on at like 11:30 at night when I'm feeling knackered and can't handle anything with any sort of content to it. Yeah. And it's just funny and I'm happy. And that's all I need from it.
Yeah, sometimes that works.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're done.
Yeah.
Hope I went fast enough. I felt like I went fast.
Yeah.
No, I think you did fine. Okay, well, let's go
ahead. You didn't go slow enough for it to be in the show notes. A lot of them are going to be missed.
It's always funny when we have a show that we've talked about for years and years, but we finally talk about it for more than 40 seconds, so it appears in the show notes. Anyway, well, let's call it there. Next episode will be our 10-year anniversary of starting this podcast, and we'll be trying to do something a little special. But until then, remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Email us questions at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Blue Sky, Keyframes Pod, and find us on Facebook, I guess, still Keyframes Podcast. And most of all, tell a friend.
But not just any femme Ben, and it's been a while since I've done this because
I've been holding it up.
Oh,
for
cheers,
you.
Man. Yeah, appreciate.
John's
appreciate
been doing
it.
His best, yeah.
But I would tell the friends who've been really into those horse memes lately because Emma Musume came out in an English dub, and it's really good. And then you go.
I was going to say, go find a dumbass octopus.
You could go find a dumbass octopus, or find a dumbass horse, and. and just be aware that there might be something secret in the tank. Me and Duncan are going to cook up. Horse girl.
That's a threat.
Not for us.
Okay, we'll say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
The carrot and the stick.